Hello, Nick. How are you? It's been a while since we've done a recording of one of these podcasts.
I know. Where have we been? We've been all over the place. You've been in New Orleans.
I have. I think that since the last time that we did one of these, I've been in New York, in Washington, D.C., in Richmond, Virginia, and Oakland, California, and New Orleans. And now I'm here in beautiful, sunny Atlanta, Georgia. And we have a guest today, a return guest, Dr. Ruthie Yao, who is coming back not as a Britain Fellow, but as a...
What is your title, Ruthie?
Do I even remember?
Do you remember?
Service Learning and Partnerships Specialist at the Center for Serve, Learn, Sustain here at Georgia Tech.
That is a mouthful, but it sounds like a good, exciting mouthful. I'm Andrew Marzoni.
I'm Toby Wilson Bates.
I'm Nick Sturm.
And this is The Office Hour. Well, so the reason that Ruthie decided to come back and talk to us today, and this was Toby's idea. Toby isn't here because he's like taking his daughter to swimming lessons or something.
Hi, Toby.
Toby thought it would be a great idea to have a podcast about this term that maybe you've heard bandied about before, which is alt-ac, and that is spelled A-L-T-A-C. And I think it's supposed to be like, what is even stand for, like alternative academia or something like that, or alternative to academia?
I don't know. I hadn't even encountered the abbreviation until I started here at Georgia Tech a few months ago.
Yeah, I hadn't.
The first time I saw it, I thought it was another key on my keyboard that I had never seen before.
Well, anyway, I think we are talking about alt-ac. I want to know, ultimately, whether it's, like, the same alt as, like, alt-rock or, like, the alt-right.
Possibly both.
Possibly both. But is alt-ac, like, a derogatory term? Like, do you feel uncomfortable if I was like, oh, yeah, Ruthie is, like, an alt-ac person? How does that make you feel?
I think it sounds, like, as per the... like rock possibilities and or other cultural arenas. Like I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, I'm alt.
Alternative.
But I also, no one says it in my world anymore.
Right.
Which is sort of what we're talking about.
Uh-huh, yeah, sure.
That term doesn't exist outside of academia. Once you are alt, then you are something really terrifyingly big brothery, like an academic professional.
Sure.
Which is what I am.
Sure.
So I identify with it in as much as it's less big brothery and creepy than academic professional, which truly makes you seem like a bot, you know, or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that you've done this before because I've, like, heard you do it at the SLS office. But can you maybe, like, tell our listeners who haven't heard, like, what is it exactly that you do, Ruthie?
Yes, gladly. So I am one of a staff of five, which is cool. And our office is a sustainability and community engagement office. And I'm on the community engagement side, in as much as there are two sides, which there aren't, because there are five of us. And my work is partnerships. So I try to link faculty and students to external or internal partners, right? So if students are working on sustainability in water or green infrastructure, maybe I'm going to hook them up with the West Side. I mean, there are so many organizations. The West Atlanta Land Trust, for example, right? So thinking about how community organizations could be profitably, and not to use that in dollars and cents, but use it more intellectually and community-wise, linked to professors or student projects in ways that move forward bigger agendas, like, you know, climate change research, or the sort of broad sweep, if we're looking that way at my job, is thinking about networks across institutions, across the University of Georgia system, and even across the world, in as much as sustainability is an engagement with global predicaments. So that's like what I would say in an effort to clarify what I do and the ways in which it is cool, because there are many ways in which it is cool. there are many other ways that are challenging that we can talk about, but yeah, that's what I do at SLS. I primarily interact with faculty and community organizations and a little bit with students, which is, of course, an inverse from my previous work.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So, and it's worth noting too, right? So you were a Britain Fellow for 2 years. Mm-hmm. You taught, you know, English 1101, English 1102 classes. You tutored at the Communication Center. Mm-hmm. But your academic training is actually in American Studies, right? And your work was is as an ethnographer.
Right.
I'm curious whether... Is that work as an ethnographer? It seems to have some kind of clear echoes in the kind of work that you're doing now, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, are there ways in which, like, your academic professional position is maybe kind of more similar or has more in common with the research, the work you were doing, for instance, in graduate school or something like that, mm-hmm. than you know, teaching mm-hmm. students how to, like, write thesis statements mm-hmm. or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's the other, I would say, like, daisies and sunshine part of it, is that there are lots of ways in which being an anthropologist come historian and an ethnographer translated well, because I like to think about how community formation happens and how stakeholders talk to each other and how big cultural formations affect the way that universities function and the way that students understand their capacity to change the world, right? That specifically being my research is still relevant in terms of how Georgia Tech students understand their education and resources here as having an impact on their capacity to do clean energy work, right? So definitely my outlook on social and cultural systems and the way that I think about, I guess, the stakes of discourse, that's translatable, which is neat, and has concrete ramifications, right? Like, rather than writing about my theorizations of cultural formations, I am theorizing them and then trying to use a word I truly hate, but somehow use all the time now in my life, leverage them.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. And deliverable. Don't forget about.
Right. How can we ever forget about deliverables? But you touch on something that I was particularly interested in too, because I am on the job market right now, and we were just discussing this outside. Like, who knows what'll happen with that? But one thing I think about is I'm kind of in the midst of this research project, and I'm doing all this kind of archival research on and kind of building a library of things that I want to write about, hopefully in the one day, the effort of publishing a kind of monograph or something having to do with that, which you did recently, right? Your book is titled what again?
Oh, Andrew. Students of the Dream, Resegregation in a Southern City.
And this came out earlier this year? Was it this year or was it last year now?
No, it came out a couple of weeks ago.
Well, yeah. This is very timely then.
This is timely.
Yeah,
yes.
So it came out a couple of weeks ago from Harvard University Press,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So as someone who has written a book, published research, how does that feel to now be kind of leveraging that kind of research, that body of expertise that you've developed, rather than writing it in the kind of traditional, more or less academic way that you have in the past? Like, do you still envision yourself as an academic professional conducting research, producing knowledge in the same way that you have in the past? Is that different? If it is, how does that feel?
I do not see myself as conducting research and producing knowledge in the same way. Ultimately, I hope I will, sort of as our office figures out who does what, as our staff grows, I think it will become making these kinds of speculations may not be prudent, but I think that there will be sort of greater room for me to do the work that I'm trained to do, to think about a research agenda for our office, to identify and sort of herd the folks who are capable of executing and want to execute research about sustainability and community engagement. But that's not, I mean, that is interesting to me, and I think I'm capable of that kind of work, but that doesn't have anything really directly to do with the kind of work I did in the field or the way that I was positioning myself as a scholar on the market. And that's okay. You know, like, there's a certain heartbreak in, like, holding my book and opening it and smelling it and doing those weird things you do. And, like, doing cool stuff, like, being interviewed about it and realizing that, like, well, okay. This is a thing I did.
Does it feel belated now? Is it kind of, you know, just...
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's like, I think it's interesting and rewarding and wonderful to produce knowledge. That was air quotes. But I don't know yet how that mode of moving through the world, being disciplined in those ways, is going to translate into my life now.
Is it a relief in some way?
In some ways, for sure. Yeah. In some ways, for sure. I mean, like, one of the heavinesses around producing a book is thinking about what everyone's going to think about it. And I kind of, like, don't give any figs, you know? It's like, well, if it gets really badly reviewed, oh, well. Like, if it gets great reviews, great!
Sure.
If it gets no reviews, who cares? So that's, like, a beautiful kind of shedding of worry. But it also feels like, well, like, I wanted this book to enter a conversation that I'm no longer in, right?
Yeah.
So, like, what's that about?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah, how do you stay engaged with that conversation, or do you?
Or enter a new one, right? How do I make that book speak to the conversations I am in about community engagement and about sustainability and equity, right? And I think I can, but I need to figure out how to make that work.
Yeah, and you're talking about these new vocabularies, leveraging things, creating deliverables. Are there approaches or even kind of value systems or conversations you're seeing in your work at SLS that make you reflect on your experience as a teacher and think about things you might have done differently, not to prepare yourself to be an academic professional or to work in SLS necessarily, but things you would have done differently as a teacher to incorporate the kind of values into your classrooms? Not that you weren't doing that already, but are there opportunities you're seeing, or you look around at other teachers and see spaces where you could do this, why don't you do this, ways to make suggestions to alter pedagogies or class structures?
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess it's easy to say from where I am now that faculty should, right? And that's your point, right? But I do think that the QEP, or the Quality Enhancement Plan, to really get in the weeds and make everyone want to die, the Quality Enhancement Plan is pretty wonderful, actually. The mandate that it is pressing us toward, and this is like, I want to tell this because it's an aside that I think is germane. I presented at the American Studies Association conference last week about community engagement. And I was the only alt-acker, right?
Uh-huh.
I was the only academic professional on the panel. Everyone else was tenure track or tenured. And it was a very interesting conversation, but it was deeply frustrating to me because it was more about theorizing the neoliberal academy and its capacity to stimulate positive change, to actually be community engaged, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is what SLS does, right? We believe in the capacity of faculty and students to be community engaged and community members and organizations to have a reciprocal productive relationship with the university, right? Mm-hmm. And that's sort of fundamentally incongruent with contemporary theorizing of the role of the university in disciplines like American Studies. And the panel was very much about unpacking the nefariousness of the neoliberal university. And I was like, ill-advisedly, perhaps, I don't know who pays you guys, but
right.
We're all complicit. Mm-hmm. So how do we move forward, acknowledging our complicity, but also creating pathways toward within the existing systems that rebuke them productively, mm-hmm. right? And I would say that as faculty members here, to finally return to your really good question, Nick, as faculty members, I think that we do have the capacity to rebuke productively, right? Through our teaching and through doing community engagement. And that's what SLS is about, right? Let us help you do neat work with our support, because you're already hashtag neoliberal university contingent adjunct, right? The adjunctification. You're already so overworked. Mm-hmm. Let us help you do this neat form of engagement that isn't adding too much to your load, but is engaging your courses, your research, and your teaching with these concerns that touch it mm-hmm. in these ways that maybe can move you forward, right, professionally and in terms of research agenda, and can sort of maybe set you apart in terms of the work that you would do at your next institution. Is that kind of an answer?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it makes me wonder, like, what are some exciting examples maybe you've encountered over the last few months of teachers you've worked with or faculty you've worked with?
Yeah.
With SLS.
Yeah. So I used the water example earlier because mm-hmm. there is a faculty member who, Emily Weigel, just to give her props, Emily Weigel is in biology. She's totally brilliant. She's about our age. And she's going to do an SLS buzz course. So it's a condensed, like, semester in 6 hours that engages community members, faculty, students, and other sort of professionals, other folks in the field, around clean streams and citizen science, right? How do we all become involved in cleaning up our watersheds? And how do you, how does everyone co-train and co-teach and co-educate in ways that maximize or ways that tap individual talents? Instead of imagining that one expert should be positioned at the front of the classroom, community members have expertise about sort of the local history of the watershed, while biology professors may have expertise around testing methods, water testing methods, and students will have expertise around creative projects that use the data to move the agenda of community members forward and enrich text capacity to help clean the watershed, right? Mm-hmm. So that's sort of like that. That's to me a really neat way that SLS is doing that convening work, and potentially a neat way that Emily is, I hope, going to, and her students are going to benefit from, and community members are going to benefit from tech's role and SLS's role as a convener. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
So it's worth noting that in the English 1101, 1102 classes that you taught when you were a Britain Fellow, you were still kind of heavily engaged in the kind of, like, community-building stuff that you're doing now.
Yeah.
But has it changed your perspective at all on, like, how teaching or education happens based on the context that you were doing that sort of stuff before?
Yeah. I guess... That's interesting, and that's hard, Andrew.
Yeah, no, I know.
Well, I guess, like, so to, like, be a little cheap, I would turn it around and say, what do you guys feel that you can do as teachers? What can you do in the classroom that you cannot do anywhere else?
I've been thinking about this recently in terms of, like, how I'm much more authoritarian as a teacher than I would ever be in, like, any other space at all ever in my entire life. And that's not, and I mean, I push totally against, like, the authoritative nature of my job, right? But just in terms of the way that things are structured, where, like, I have to give grades and assignments and things like that, necessitates a certain kind of, like, I mean, maybe that's not across the board in terms of all teaching gigs, but in this specific one, the Writing and Communication Program at Georgia Tech, there are certain things that I have to do that require at least a modicum of, like, hey guys, I'm in charge here.
On the other side of that too, you can imagine saying it in the way each semester you have 75 open-minded strangers that you have the opportunity to really motivate or devote them to something. There's no other opportunity where you have that kind of this many people in front of you who you can motivate for this lengthy but determined amount of time, and you can complete these projects that don't just refer back to what you knew when you walked into the room with them the first time.
Absolutely.
So that's...
Yeah.
You have a tiny army.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Which you can mobilize in various ways.
For the revolution.
I realize that, you know, I do not really matter in the scheme of things. And, like, though my work, I think, is extremely valuable, that's really not how it's seen on a systematic level, right? Like, I'm an infinitely replaceable person. And because of that, it allows me, I mean, just in terms of the job market, you know, like, they could, I'm sure if, like, they fired me, they could get someone here, like, on Thursday to replace me, right? which, you know, knock on wood. But, and thankfully Thursday is Thanksgiving. But I think because of that tendency to see myself as like kind of offering a kind of providing a base function within the structure of the university, it doesn't actually allow me to see how things work, I guess, because that's not something that is really on my radar at all. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you were describing, and I don't know if this is related to what you're saying, Andrew, but the way that the 15-week semester organizes our entire approach to our work, and that there's a beginning to an end to every large conversation you have in an academic year.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the way that you're describing, like, the ongoingness mm-hmm. of the work that you would do with community partnerships and sustainability, that implementing them in the classroom isn't about segmenting them and making them fit into a limited time frame that a semester works on, but in showing students that the thinking that they do, the work that they're doing, is larger than the semester itself, mm-hmm. and that our work as academics is more ongoing. Mm-hmm. That, like, because so often I feel like one of the things you're battling teaching students critical thinking and analysis is not that they should just suddenly have a position on something or come to a stance, that you need to have this ongoing appreciation of the process of thinking.
Such a good point.
And to not take a position and to not take a stance. And it sounds like the work that SLS does is about implementing that approach to thinking and then its embodiment in the world, rather than objectifying it into this, you know, means to an end. This is a grade. This is a product. This is an artifact. It's this work that you do, and that work just keeps going, and you hang out with that work for a long time.
That's great. That's beautiful. I think that's the dream. Yeah, and I think that, I hope that that is what we facilitate. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, for exactly the reasons you said, compelling to be in a space where the future is not measured in mm-hmm. 16-week segments or 15-week segments. Mm-hmm. Immediate efforts and initiatives are, but our broad vision is not, right? And we necessarily are trying to think about how are our interventions going to be seen, not just seen, but how are they going to actually be significant enough to deserve institutionalization at Georgia Tech? And if that's the case, then does that mean, or ideally I should say, what that will mean is that our role has had some kind of culture-shifting role, right? That students, that undergraduates are thinking outside of the 16-week mm-hmm. box mm-hmm. and imagining that when they are doing analysis of any kind, textual analysis of any kind in 1101 or 1102, they have the capacity to apply it in other arenas and to understand it as a sort of key, and I know this is like, not, you know, in American studies, this isn't a term that you use with any kind of loosey-goosiness, but that they understand themselves as citizens, equipping themselves with capacities that they need to engage in democratic practice. And that critical thinking and analysis that an English paper is totally, totally, totally a part of that.
Is, if you were to talk to, you know, a young humanities or social sciences postdoc or graduate student who is considering, you know, maybe saying goodbye to the traditional academic trajectory for something more alternative, what, if any, advice would you offer?
No pressure.
No.
There are a lot of, I think, arenas for us to do the work that we feel somehow meant to do, right? Intellectually or cosmically. But that it can be, that it's challenging, ontologically challenging, to reimagine yourself if you imagined yourself as a teacher primarily, or a writer primarily, or a researcher, can be challenging to reimagine how to channel that, whatever your engagement with the world is, into a new space with new rules and new expectations and a new culture. But I would also say that it is a really important moment to, and I think that all of us sort of move into new endeavors with mixtures of doubt and hope, or like maybe some people are just all hope, and I don't know if they're like really brilliant and amazing or like kind of dumb, but like, but I think, you know, we would move into, that I would hope that we as academics would move into new endeavors with the sense that, Not that we have failed, right? Mm-hmm. That there's nothing wrong, of course. This is like, as per our conversation earlier, what is like and conversations with, you know, that I was having with myself and friends last year, what is wrong with my job letter? Mm-hmm. It must be that semicolon.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, right.
So it is rather that when you are negotiating your place vis-a-vis structural forces, historical forces, and economic necessity, that doesn't make you us less deeply and thoroughly capable of doing the thinking and writing we want to do, right? But that rather the stresses that we're discussing create doubt around the importance or relevance or originality of that work, and those are not related, right? Those don't have anything to do with each other.
Right. It doesn't mean you're not an intellectual anymore.
Or a really great teacher.
Right. Yeah.
Or not cut out, or not, you know, destined. Rather that unfortunately it falls to us in this moment to do that work of thinking about how we can best be teachers, writers, readers, you know, doers in the world, outside of what is a sort of disarray.
Right.
A structural disarray.
Because maybe the world needs us more than the classroom does.
From my perspective, I would remind us that the world and the classroom are inextricable, and that at SLS, we can help you.
Yeah. Okay.
Like a community partner to engage your class with the world.
Now, that's totally true.
Should I insert my jingle?
Yeah, you should.
Is there a place for a flyer?
Yeah, absolutely. That's amazing. Well, this has been beautiful. Thank you so much, Ruthie, for coming back.
Yeah,
we should have you back again soon. Everyone who's listening to this should buy Ruthie's book.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, Students of the Dream. Harvard University Press, 2017. Dr. Ruth Carbonet. Yeah.
Thanks,
right?
Andrew.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Thank you so much for being
name
here.
Magic.
I know, right?
Thank you guys for your time and your smart, wonderful questions. It's like totally fun to be with both of you.
Yeah, of course. And we should have someone that's partnering with you, doing some work with you, come back and kind of talk about that.
That'd
do a little
rad.
Case study time.
That'd be amazing.
That'd be rad.
The Office Hour is a production of the Britton Fellows in the Writing and Communication Program at Georgia Tech. For more information, visit us on the internet at textile.lmc.gatech.edu. Thanks for listening!